Merry Christmas, you wonderful old building and loan. We're talking It's a Wonderful Life. Hit it. It was the 1980s. 3M began sales of Post-it notes. Australia had a mini gold rush. AC/DC was back in black, and Clarence helped George Bailey examine his impact on the world. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now, joining me is a very special guest. You'll know her as one of the hosts of the Way Tubular 12 Days pod, Kara Zelaya. Kara, how's it going?
Hi, how are you? It's going great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. I'm really excited about this one. And it's a little bit of a cheat because It's a Wonderful Life is not exactly from the 80s, but there is a workaround, which we'll get to in a bit.
Oh, really? I'm excited to find out. You're going to teach me something.
Well, I'm sure it's not much, but how's life been treating you?
Oh, it's great. You know, we're in the festive season now. Like, Halloween's over. That's the way I'd see it. There's no denying it. I live in Virginia, so it's a little warm today. It was like 77, but it's all right. I'm hanging in there.
I feel you because I'm in Texas.
And oh, wow.
Same thing. It was the 70s here. Yeah, we normally have like green Christmases, so.
Oh yeah. I'm originally from Florida. So for me, it's fine. But my Dan from 12 Days Pod, my boyfriend, was living in Duluth, Minnesota for the last like 3 years where it is like, he gets in like the negative 30s. So,
oh my gosh, I can't even imagine that, you know, and I'm from actually South Texas originally. So
oh, wow.
Like anything like under 60 is like freezing, you know?
Yeah. I'm from Miami, so I get it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. but you're right. Yeah. We're right in the middle of the holiday season. So yeah, I can't wait. I'm ready for Christmas.
Yeah, I'm ready for It's a Wonderful Life too. I'm ready to celebrate. Get
me
that
too.
Good feeling.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Let's get into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what's your history, or like, what's your general feelings on It's a Wonderful Life?
So I saw It's a Wonderful Life, not like super growing up, I guess in like my early 20s. I went to a really good, very intense prep school for high school. And I was introduced to Frank Capra films by my high school history teacher who made us watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which
nice.
Is another classic Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm. And I actually recently rewatched it and it holds up
amazingly
well.
It really so, does, yeah.
So I then like became obsessed with Jimmy Stewart and I watched It's a Wonderful Life and it became probably my like seminal Christmas movie. And then I haven't seen it for a while. And when we started making 12 Days Pod, Dan had never seen it. And I was like, how have you not seen this? You're an all-American boy. So we sat down and watched it. And again, continues to hold up, continues to make me cry. I don't know. There's something about that movie that is so magical to me. And I was doing a little research before we were recording just now to see what I didn't like about
oh,
It's
right,
a Wonderful
yeah.
Life.
Yeah.
Because it was tough for me to come. And then I found all this, like, It's a Wonderful Life hate. And I was like, oh no, this is too dark. I don't
want to
be here.
Well, it is one of those that there are some people, and they're not very many, but there are some that don't consider it an actual, like, Christmas movie.
Yeah. And, Dan said that too when he watched it. He's like, it's not really a Christmas movie. And I was like, yes, it is.
You're like, stop it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny and the reason it's actually associated more with Christmas rather than just the actual story is because of a typo in the copyright. So when the copyright was going to be renewed in 1974, there was a mistake. And so it was never renewed. And so stations literally, because they didn't have to pay anything for it, they would just show it. Local stations.
Wow. Yeah.
mom and pop stations, anything. And so in the 80s, it was literally on hundreds of local TV channels just because no one owned the copyright. And so it was one of those free things they could just show. And so because of that, it actually really became a Christmas movie and a classic.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. And I think there is some people have somewhere to land when it comes to it, the argument that it's not a Christmas movie. Like when I did the research for it, I found out that it was filmed during a heat wave.
Yes.
But for me, that also doesn't hold up because like all of these Hallmark movies are filmed in like June.
So, yeah. Like, that's exactly right. Yep.
but also it came out, I believe, in January, if I'm not mistaken. Like it was like after the Christmas holidays that it originally premiered.
Yeah. It was around there. And it's just one of those. I mean, I know they had to actually create their own snow because what they were using as the fake snow wasn't quite working.
Yeah.
And so from there, they actually came up with something so ingenious that now that's like the go-to for fake snow.
I had no idea. That's good to know.
Yeah. Before then, it was all like cornflakes and things like that they would just kind of paint white. And so they'd get the natural crunching sound as well. But it's like a soap kind of based thing. I don't know how. I mean, it's
interesting.
You know, I have a degree in physics, but I didn't look into this, so I can't tell you exactly how. It's,
Dan's a chemical engineer, so I'll ask.
So he'll probably that. Yeah. He'll like, probably figure that's it easy. Out. It's like, of course, I know how they did that. but yeah, it's actually and when you think about it, it was groundbreaking in a lot of ways. But it's funny because it got a lot of. Or I should say it didn't get a lot of play back when it came out. It was kind of considered a flop. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that it was considered a flop because, I mean, now it's on so much that like countless shows have copied the premise and, you know, for their own Christmas specials. And there've been other movies that kind of copied the premise. And so it's like a staple of Christmas, I think, at this point.
One of the things that we learned, because we did an episode on It's a Wonderful Life as well. And one of the things that we learned is that I'm forgetting the name of the angel that comes down and talks to Jimmy Stewart's character.
Clarence.
Yes. There is a sequel that was made in the early 90s. So maybe we can plug that as the 80s angle as well.
There you go. Yeah. I stretch the 80s till 93.
That's perfect. Exactly. And it was like it's basically based around Clarence and how he has, I don't know, some other mission. We didn't dig that deep into it, but the guy who plays Clarence, and this might be like, I'm aging myself and being fairly young, is the same guy who plays the dad in the Lizzie McGuire TV show from like the 2000s in Disney Channel.
I gotcha. Yeah.
So okay. we were like, who is this guy? And we're like, oh my God, it's Lizzie McGuire's dad.
Oh man. I got to confess that was definitely after my time. So now I'm aging myself the other way. But.
You said the 80s went to 93. I was born in 1990. So I'm an 80s kid.
There you go.
Everyone hates me. Now everyone hates me.
No. You're good. Yeah. But yeah, the actress that played Zuzu, Carolyn Grimes, she actually never saw the movie until 1980 herself.
Wow.
That's just crazy to me. You know, you like you got paid to act in this, you got to meet like one of the biggest named actors like at the time, and you never actually watched what you did. I mean,
oh my goodness. That's wild.
That's amazing. Yeah. But anyway.
It was a time before on demand.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. This is back when you actually had to like stick a VHS in the recorder.
I'd love to show a VHS to a like Gen Zer and be like, look at this thing that we had to do.
Their head might explode, I think.
Truly.
But I guess we can go ahead and just hop right into it.
It
essentially, if you want to nutshell it, because I like to nutshell these things before we actually go detailed, but it's a man who's desperate because of, you know, his circumstances, wants to commit suicide, and an angel actually tries to help him out and see that that's not the right thing to do.
Right.
That's the nutshell version, but it's way deeper than that.
So many subplots.
There are. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so George Bailey is played by Jimmy Stewart. He's the main character here. And it's Christmas Eve in 1945 in a little town called Bedford Falls, which is, I guess, kind of upstate New York-ish.
Yeah, vaguely New York.
Yeah, exactly. And I've never been that area, so I really can't say. I'll just take their word for it. But I'm sure living in Virginia, I'm sure it's a lot more familiar to you.
I lived in New York City so for 4 years. So whenever anyone talks about like upstate New York and New York City, they mean any part that's not New York City.
No, I got you. Yeah.
Okay. So it could be 10 minutes north of New York City. We're like, yeah, upstate New York. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So it's upstate New York.
Yeah.
And he's thinking about committing suicide because he's so desperate. And we'll find out why later on. It's kind of really strange because the whole Christmas part really just bookends the entire story. Yeah. And then most of it is done through flashbacks, which is another really odd thing that you don't normally see. Like the flashback, I mean, the only other movie that I can think of that has a flashback that lasts that long is like Bloodsport with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
So, yeah, there aren't that many that long flashbacks in film.
Yeah, it's definitely something different. But it works. I mean, they really get you to feel for the character, empathize with him, so that by the time we cut back to him and his, you know, contemplation, we're just there with him, and we really feel his circumstances and his desperation. And yeah. I don't even know what else to say. It's just it touches you so much because it's like, no, yeah. George, don't. You have your children and your wife. And
it is also like kind of a very quintessential American dream story. And, you know, like, I think right now we're all just like clinging to any joy and like positivity. It's been such a hard year that we've all been experiencing. Mm-hmm. And so I was watching it and I was rewatching it this year. And I was so taken by this idea of like how popular this movie is when all of its messaging is so much like, look out for your neighbor, help out your community. You know, like he has a couple of opportunities where he can make a lot of money and he just kind of like narrowly misses it kind of thing.
Yes.
And, you know, he wants to go see the world basically. And like, he thinks that his dreams have never come true. And that, you know, I'll get to this and when we talk about our least favorite scenes, but he like swears that he'll never get married at one point. And then, you know, like ends up in this beautiful marriage with Donna Reed.
I know.
So gorgeous.
Know. Lucky dude. Yep.
I'm like, Jimmy, calm down. Like your life is amazing. So, you know, it's really it's such a good story that holds up so well because so much of what we're learning right now, especially during this pandemic, is that it's like, oh wow, all we really have is like our families and like our immediate community, our very immediate community. how we treat each other, you know, and that determines our lives in so many ways. So yeah, I mean, like that's the thing about this movie is that it really is just like this man, this family, this community's story. But it's also this like emotional, I mean, it still makes me cry. I've seen it like a dozen times and every time I cry. But it also has become, I think, such a thing in pop culture too, where it's like the George, don't do it. Like, I think this movie sparked so many kind of subplots in that, or at least it's been memed or made fun of. Like, I think The Simpsons did a thing.
I love The Simpsons. So.
Yeah, same.
that's exactly right. It's poignant and it cuts to the heart of it, I think.
Yeah.
And this year of all the years, you know, I've lived 40 years now and this is definitely the weirdest. So right. I'm so glad that I'm here with my family and we're all safe and good now. But so he's thinking of doing that and his wife and his family are praying hard for him and their prayers are heard by some angels. And so Joseph, I guess, is like the head angel in charge, is talking to Clarence Oddbody, who's just an angel second class, which I thought was kind of funny. And so, you know, he says, well, you know, this man wants to throw away essentially the greatest gift, which is life, you know, and love and all that. And he says, so it's our job to help him, but he doesn't understand. Clarence doesn't understand why. And so they kind of show him his life. And so cut to George growing up. And yeah, we hear a lot of those, you know, I can't wait to leave this town and see the world and I'm going to design buildings and all sorts of things like that. And
yeah,
but it's a cool little thing where like Donna Reed's character as a little girl also already has like a huge crush on George.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I mean, yeah, as a little boy, I had little crushes on little girls, but I never thought I'd like marry them.
Marry them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, you know, he saves his brother from drowning because his brother like falls into some ice, and so he saves him. But at the same time, he loses his hearing in one of his ears, and so there's a really cool bit where she's, you know, he's like bending over doing something, and she just kind of whispers into his bad ear, you know, yeah. I'm gonna love you till the day I die or something.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
It really is.
But yeah, also kind of mean. I love it.
Because he never knows.
Yeah, he never knows.
Oh, man. But yeah, so he saves his brother. He works for the local pharmacist or druggist. I don't know what they're called at the time. And he also prevents the pharmacist from actually putting in the wrong medicine and killing a patient. And so
poisoning someone
because the pharmacist just received word that his son had perished in, was it the war? I think.
Yeah, it was the war.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was just, again, it's so heavy, but yeah. But he, you know, he doesn't deliver the medicine to the lady because he knows it's the wrong pill.
Yeah.
And so he spares the pharmacist the embarrassment, and so he just doesn't deliver it. The pharmacist gets a call, and I know I'm going to go into detail in some of these things, not everything, but this is one that I think is really, really important because it shows already his character and how he kind of wants to protect people and do the right thing at the same time. And so it's just, you know, the pharmacist starts to beat him because back then, I guess that's what you did.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yikes. Yeah. A little problematic, but anyway, so, you know, he's like, my bad ear. And so he tells him like, hey, you know, I knew it wasn't the right one. And so the pharmacist looks at it and checks it out. And sure enough, it would have poisoned the lady. And so, you know, he's turns his life around essentially from that.
Yeah.
And so already at age 12, he's helping people, which is
also a sign of the times. This man got this letter that, you know, his child died in the war and he just kept working.
Well, yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right. Nowadays, yeah. Dude.
It's like, you know, I'm going to take off for a little bit. But yeah, it does show this little boy's amazing character, you know, to stand up to his employer, an adult, you know, and and also just like a gut feeling too, because he, you know, to be able to piece that together shows a level of emotional maturity that, like,
yeah,
you know,
I don't think I would have been able to at that time. No. No, for sure. So we see him growing up. He wants to go, like you said, see the world. He's going to go to college. But that's when he's introduced to Mary, I guess reintroduced, I suppose, and who's always had a crush on him. And it's just, at this point, this is when his father has a stroke. Or was it a stroke or a heart attack? I don't recall which one.
I don't remember which one it was either, but something that basically good.
Exactly. And unfortunately, he passes away. And so now, you know, he's handling his father's affairs. He's already postponed college a little bit. And so now he wants to go, but the only way that they'll keep the building and loan, which is the business that his dad ran, open is if George actually takes over. And we kind of have this big interplay because he doesn't want to do it, but at the same time he knows that if he doesn't, then Mr. Potter, who's like the town financier,
town bad guy,
I suppose, essentially, yeah, developer, I don't know what he is, but if he doesn't, he's going to take over, and a lot of people are going to be left with shoddy homes that they can't, you know, they're terribly built. They're very low quality. They're expensive at the same time. And so he knows if he doesn't do it, people are going to be in trouble. So he stays and he sends his brother essentially to college.
Yeah.
Which again, it's like, oh, right in the feels as an older brother, that got me.
Yeah, I'm an older sister. I'm a middle child, but I'm an older sister as well, in a sense. And it is so heart-wrenching. And then also, I think, you know, the idea of having to take on your parents' like legacy,
yeah,
prematurely. And then also, like, one of the things about this Something and Loan, I think it's called, Building and Loan.
Yeah.
The Building and Loan is that it is basically the only way that people in his neighborhood have been able to like keep their homes and start businesses basically with no credit other than the fact that they are hardworking. And I don't know if you'll get into this, but one of the families who gets a loan is Martini, I think.
Oh, the Martinis. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they open up a bar called Martini, I believe, and they have a house. And you know, it's clearly like an Italian-American family, which in that time was like the immigrant family kind of story. And it's so poignant. And it's really amazing the levels that this movie gets into in the 2 hours that it runs. When we watched it, Dan was like, there's 8 different lives in this movie. And I'm like, I know, it's beautiful. And he's like, it's not a Christmas movie.
He doesn't know.
He doesn't know. He's wrong.
but yeah, you're right. And it shows him that he doesn't discriminate. He's very, you know, just loving. If someone needs help, he's going to help them. And that's, I mean, he's building, and this is where we get to the greatest gift, you know, and the whole message of the movie at the end that they talk about on Christmas Eve, but he's just building these friends and family.
Right.
And it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so he sends his brother to college. He's going to run the business and loan for a while till his brother graduates, and then his brother will take over so he can go to college. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, his brother comes back married. And he's got like a great job offer from his father-in-law, you know, his new wife's dad. And he doesn't want his brother to not take it because it's such a great offer. And so again, he doesn't, I mean, he's down, he's sad, but he doesn't take it. He tells Harry to go.
Yeah.
And it's, oh man, it's getting me just thinking about it. It's one of those, I never get this choked up on talking about this, but this one really got me.
Yeah. It's so many layers of just like the familial aspect of it. Also, his mom is just like alive through all of this too. Like she's in the background. And also Mary's part, you know, who he is dating and then eventually marries, she always seems to be very content to be in this town, right? She seems very content with this life. And it's interesting that when that shift doesn't come to him until he has that moment of crisis, you know, because she's just like, she's thriving, you know, she's like, she's perfectly happy with her house, which is a whole other plot point. there's so many, but you know, she's happy. She doesn't want a rich husband. She has the opportunity to marry rich.
She does.
Point,
yeah.
And then she's not interested in that. And it's so interesting because part of me is like sentimental and is like, of course I understand giving your dreams up. And then the other part of me is like, George, everyone around you understands how special you are. Like,
Exactly. Oh man. I love when they're at the dance, when
he
takes her to the dance and, and then they're dancing and alfalfa or he presses the button and then the dance floor like starts to open to reveal the actual swimming pool underneath and they're just like, everyone's just backing away. He's like, wow, we must be great, everyone's watching us. And they fall in. Oh, it's classic.
It's so sweet.
It is, but it's just, it's one of those classic moments, honestly, that's been, you know, replayed a lot because after that, they're walking home, she's got the robe on, he's wearing just a football uniform, their clothes are all wet. And, that's when we get that classic line, you know, hey, what do you want, Mary? You want the moon, you know?
Yeah.
I'll last you the moon. And so that's just another, I mean, this film, I think, is like peppered with all these little, like seminal moments of film history that, you know, you don't normally see in a film nowadays. I mean, you can take Elf is great. I love Elf, but it's not, it doesn't have like the same impact that It's a Wonderful Life has.
Yeah.
I think.
I'm watching Elf tonight, actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm rewatching. I've seen it before. Okay. But, it's interesting because I came into this whole journey of watching Christmas movies and talking about them for a podcast. And I came in here very strong being like, I'm gonna really fall for the modern classics, right? Mm-hmm. Because I am a big believer that we are in a really good age of cinema. And Although I've seen a lot of old movies, you know, I'm a firm like believer of that. Like there's a lot of trash, but that's just because there's a lot of movies now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's amazing films being made. And it's what's interesting is what has really gotten me has been, I saw Miracle on 34th Street for the first time yesterday.
That's a good one. Yeah.
yeah. And then I rewatched this and it was just this, you know, like they are the classics for a reason and, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants, right? All these like great films that are still existing. And to the argument that It's a Wonderful Life is not a Christmas movie, which is nonsense. What it is first and foremost is an excellent movie. And that's what I think really makes it shine, right?
Yes.
And I'm all for watching excellent movies on Christmas. So.
Yeah. Take that, Anthony, from Tis a Podcast. Just kidding. Love you, bro.
We love him.
Yeah, we do. But I mean, you're right. It's a classic for a reason.
Yeah.
And maybe the reason is because it was shown a lot in the 80s, but but at the same time, people really latched onto that trope because there is something very well made about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Frank Capra movie. I mean,
you can't
go wrong with Frank Capra.
Exactly.
Yes, they're sentimental, but they always hit the mark, I think.
Yeah. And what's so wrong with being sentimental? We all need to cry more this year.
For real. Yeah. In a good way. Yeah.
In a good way. Yeah, for sure.
Oh man. But yeah, so he sends Harry to go work at his father-in-law's place. He's continues to run the building alone, but at this point he's kind of just upset and frustrated, and so he goes to see Mary, and this is when we get that classic scene where they kiss for the first time. And this was like his first on-screen kiss since he had been fighting in the war, since he had been back. So it was
Jimmy
really
Stewart himself is an entire awkward. Other podcast.
You're right. Yeah.
You just like peppered that in, which I knew, but like, it's like, oh, after Jimmy came back from the war, he made It's a Wonderful Life.
that's correct. Yes. Yeah. And it's, oh man. It.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I don't know if I would have been comfortable with a scene like that. You know, I don't even know if I would have wanted to make the movie.
Yeah.
And I know that when Frank Capra and him sat down and he was pitching the idea to him, he really wasn't selling it well at all. Mm-hmm. And he was really kind of messing it up. And Jimmy Stewart said something like, hey, if you want me to play a man who tries to commit suicide and I have to save an angel from drowning to change my life, I'll do it. I'm in. You know, when do we start? And I was like, oh, man, see, that's awesome. That's Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, that's Jimmy Stewart. Yeah.
Oh, man. Donna Reed. Yeah. but yeah, so they get together, they get married, and they have $2,000 saved up that, you know, he'd been saving. It's going to be their honeymoon money. They're going to go see the world and go on their honeymoon. It's amazing.
Oh yeah.
But this is when the depression hits and there's a run on the bank. And so because there's a run on the bank, there's a run on the building and loan as well. And so they end up, right after their wedding, you know, they don't even get a chance to go on their honeymoon. They end up using that money to help people get some money so that they can have food. And it's one of those that as a kid, I didn't understand how, you know, he says like your money's in his house and his money's over there. And I didn't understand what he meant, you know, because it's all tied up as collateral and things like that to help others. And so I didn't get it, but now of course, seeing it as an adult, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those where, again, you're impressed by the way he uses his own money to kind of help people out, and how he convinces the town, look, we have to care for each other. I know you want all your money, but please, what do you need to get through
this week?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so good. Like he actually convinces at the end, they have $2 left out of their whole 2,000.
Yeah.
And he forgets he's married. But I love it. He's like,
but what I love is that Mary is right next to him being like, how much do you need? Like, yeah, she is right there, you know?
And it's her idea. That's the best part, you know? And so it's not just, you know, what they say, you know, that behind every great man is a great woman.
You
know? And really, if you think about it, it really is her in this moment. You know, he's just trying to convince him not to take money out. Yeah. And she's like, no, we got you covered. And so if it wasn't for her, I don't know what could have happened to the building and loan then.
Right.
It might really have gone under. So, I mean, a lot of credit has to go to Donna Reed and Mary in this case, especially.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
But I love how she, like, slyly, because he doesn't know anything about it, bought her dream house. And it was this old kind of decrepit house. Yes. And she loved the architecture. And on that first date when they fell in the... you know, in the water and we're walking back and we get the iconic, you know, Lasso the Moon line. On that date, they pass by that house and, you know, I guess he had a thing with his friends where if you have a rock and you like throw it and break a window and make a wish, your wish will come true.
Right.
And she does it. And she really did it on her first try, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah. Donna Reed actually threw that because apparently she was like on a softball team growing up or something like that. Like,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, yeah. I know she made $50 off of Lionel Barrymore for.
Really?
Yeah. So it was like, cause she grew up on a farm and I guess there was like a cow or something on set one day. And she's like, oh yeah, I used to milk cows. And he bet her like $50 that she could not milk the cow. And she said it was the easiest $50 she ever made in her life.
And this was $50 back in the like 40s. Back 50s, in the, you know?
That's so. Right, yeah. So that's like, talk about awesome.
Yeah. That's Donna Reed.
But yeah, so she slyly bought that house. And, you know, so he goes and she kind of put like her and the cab driver and I think the police officer, Bert and Ernie.
Yeah.
It's just a coincidence. They didn't really name them Bert and Ernie, guys. But they put up like posters of like France and whatever and to make it seem like they're on their honeymoon. And so they go home and it's like a
it's
decrepit.
So sweet, though.
It is. It really is. It's a terrible house.
Oh, it's
so
bad.
But you can see like the bones are good, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Oh man. you think about it, it's like, oh gosh. God.
It really is like watching the two best people that have ever existed going through the worst time.
Yeah.
And still managing to be in love and still managing, you know, and you know, to Mary's credit, like I said earlier, she never flounders or you know, and I mean, and George doesn't either until his breaking point. Right. And that's when it's, and there's also this like subplot that when I rewatched, I never understood with Violet, where there's this neighbor or other girl who is like always like quasi flirting with George, but it never goes anywhere.
Yeah.
And he never seems particularly interested. And at some point she like goes to the building alone asking George for money so she could leave her husband, who is like, I don't know if abusive or bad in some type of way. And he gives her the money and everyone is like, oh, this is going to be some scandal. And that's, I think, one of the threads of the movie that never turns into anything. No one ever judges George.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's definitely unresolved. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at this point he's helped so many people, they just see it as like, oh, he's helping someone rather than, you know, like, oh, dude gave this chick some money. I don't know. You know?
Right. Exactly.
Like, George, what are you doing, man? You know, I really that's what it is. It's like we get a cool montage of, you know, they go through the war and he can't fight because of his bum ear.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, they help in whatever ways they can. They help people like the Martinis, you know, with their business. What's his name? Nick. They help Nick as well. Like all these different people that they're helping get new, you know, houses. And I mean, it's we see him grow and help so many people that of course everyone's going to love him and help him out at the end when the worst is going to happen. But so the Bailey Park is built. That's like a new subdivision with affordable homes that are still good quality and people can pay back whenever they can. which I it's like, wow, that's, you will not get that nowadays.
Yeah, exactly.
And Potter, old man Potter, who's, I guess, the rival, essentially, you know, the business guy that, you know, right. we mentioned earlier, you know, he even tries to hire George away.
Yeah.
For oh, a God, large yeah. sum of money. It was like 20,000 or something, 25,000, something like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, in again, 1940. So that's right. like, that's like
a ton of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course he turns him down, and that's the famous scene that we see in Home Alone mm-hmm. when they're watching in French, you know?
Yeah.
Oh man. I love that.
The Christmas oh, cinematic oh. universe.
That's right. Yeah.
One through line.
I love that. I'm going to start using that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But then this is when the whole turning point. So after all that, Uncle Billy has $8,000 he needs to deposit. He right. is confronted by old man Potter in the bank. Somehow Uncle Billy accidentally forgets to deposit it and puts it in a newspaper, which he gives to Potter. So now Potter has George's money. He knows they can't pay any of their debts or anything now. And so he actually calls, you know, an accountant and the sheriff and everything on George. And George doesn't know what to do, because at this point, it, without proof, right. or without that money, they're going to think he stole it, he's embezzling or something.
Right.
And he'll go to prison and never see his family. And so this is his breaking point. He doesn't know what to do. He knows he has like an insurance policy. He's going to think, maybe if I jump, and this is Christmas Eve, and he thinks if he kills himself that maybe his family will at least be taken care of. But that's when, before he can jump. Yeah, I know, right? Like, this is so totally rad. Yeah.
When I'm showing this movie to friends or to Dan, my partner, this time around, he's like, wait, this is the one that centers all around like a suicide, right? And I'm like, I promise this is a happy movie. I promise.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's like, it goes like real nice and happy. I mean, you get like right. like his love story, and then it goes dark, you know, where he yeah. has to use his money, and then we see his family, and then oh, the 8,000 grand, you know, right. the now he's got to jump or something. And so it's just yeah. it's really a roller coaster of a movie here, and right. I think Frank Capra balanced it really well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So he's about to jump. Clarence, they kind of, you know, he's like, no, okay. He intervenes now. He's on his mission. Clarence is, you know, the second class angel. He jumps in first, knowing, you know, at this point, all about George's character. So George jumps in to save him. And, you know, that's when they get to talking. Clarence is like, yeah, I'm an angel. And of course, he just thinks he's crazy. And as they're talking, he's like, maybe it would be better if I was never born. And so he's like, ah, you know, that's a great idea. And so he shows him what it would be like if he was never born.
Right.
And this is like one of those, I mean, I think there was even like a Family Matters episode with it. I mean, I know there's been a ton, but
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think it was like if Steve Urkel or something had never been born, I don't remember, but, but yeah, so Mary's like a spinster, which, come on, Donna Reed, she would have married Sam Wainwright. That's ridiculous.
That's my point, again, that I will pick up when we talk about what I don't like about this movie, because in what universe?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the part that is the, I think out of everything in this whole movie, that's the most unbelievable part.
I'd sooner believe that that the guardian angels would literally come down into a frozen lake.
Exactly, yeah. But his brother Harry is dead because George wasn't there to save him.
Right.
You know, Mr. Gower, the pharmacist, he ended up, you know, his son passed away. And so he ended up giving the poison to that lady, and okay. she died. And so he was a disgrace. Now he's like an alcoholic. And Martini doesn't own the building anymore. You know, the bar that he gave him the loan for it's Nick. And,
yeah.
you know, everybody's just bitter. They live in, what is it?
Potterville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And seeing all this, and we get that great Jimmy Stewart eyes scene where it's like his face, it's like a close-up on his face, he just kind of looks around and you see his crazed manic expression, and right. I love that. It's one of my favorite bits.
Yeah.
It's just a good shot.
And him just like running around kicking the snow and like
yeah, exactly, yeah,
at that
yeah.
moment, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he goes to his zoo. Oh, before then, the petals that his daughter Zuzu mm-hmm. was pulling off a flower she had given him, and he had put it in his pocket, and they were gone. And I mean, you know, just everything. Bert and Ernie didn't know who he was. And, you know, Uncle Billy, I think, was committed.
Yeah, yeah.
It's super dark.
Extremely dark.
And so now he realizes that, yes, Clarence really is an angel. And, you know, so he goes to the bridge and he just begs and prays that, you know, no, I want to be alive. He goes back to his house and finds everybody, and everyone has chipped in. Oh, I'm getting emotional. Oh, I know. I can't do it now. He's just so happy to see the family. He like picks up his daughter and hugs his wife and everybody, and he apologizes profusely. And you know, and then everybody, like when they heard that that he was in trouble, they all like pitched in their own money to save him. And then of course Sam Wainwright, or was it Sam or was it Harry's company? I don't remember who, but one of them was
Sam's.
I think it was Sam. Yeah, he's been instructed to loan him like $8,000, and so it was just like, oh man. And then we get the infamous, you know, teacher says, you know, when every time a bell rings and
he rings.
And so he realizes that Clarence, his mission accomplished, now got his wings, and he's like a first class angel, I guess, or something.
I love that these angels have classes.
It's very interesting. It's angelology. It's suspect, but it's still a great movie.
It's so good. So good. Yeah. It really is the like ultimate, if you want to feel everything, movie.
That's true.
I haven't rewatched until this year, which I watched it over the summer. I haven't rewatched it as like an adult who can drink. And I can imagine myself this year being like, okay, I'm going to like really go into some eggnog and just cry.
Maybe spike it a little bit harder.
Spike it a little bit more than normal.
For real. It's definitely one of those that it's just like, oh man. It's a classic. It's been shown almost every single year on multiple channels, because eventually in 96, I believe the copyright was actually restored.
It took them a while.
It did. Yeah, it did take them a while. I think it was in 1990 that they actually began the process again.
Wow.
Realizing that they were losing out on so much money. And I believe the copyrights actually went back to the original author, because this was based on a short story called The Greatest Gift.
Yeah.
And of course, the entire concept of Clarence and him getting his wings, that was kind of added for the movie and a few other things. But yeah, so he actually... now, or his family, probably his estate, has the copyright back.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool.
He needed it, I guess. So, I think at this point, really, I just got to ask, what would you say would be your happiest memory of this film?
I really think that for me, I've never had like a super seminal, like, oh, I watched this with a aging grandparent or anything,
right,
you know. But I think my happiest thing about it is I mentioned earlier that my teacher in high school, who like really influenced like the course of my career, really my history teacher, I ended up going to the same graduate program as him. Nice. I only applied to that program because I knew I wanted to go to Fordham in New York City, actually. Cool. And that's where I went to grad school. And he was so unbelievably formative to my values as like a person, as an American. I went to a Catholic school. I'm not particularly Catholic anymore, but like in my formation of like
my
values, you know? And so for me, even though what I watched in his class was Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, this is like an extension of that, because it's like the Frank Capra. And so my happiest memory is that I think about these, and I think about my teacher, who I wrote to this year, actually, because I was like, hey, I just wanted to let you know that you were so unbelievably, of course, I wrote it this year when we're all feeling sentimental, right?
And I'm like, that's right. Yeah.
He's probably teaching in a Zoom classroom and like he probably needs anything. So I'm going to shoot him a letter. You
know? For sure. If Christmas Eve in It's a Wonderful Life were a year, it would be.
Yeah. Totally,
yeah.
Absolutely. So I like finally got the courage. You know, I mean, I haven't seen him in 12, 13 years. And so wrote out this letter and he responded back and like remembered me and all this stuff. We're now friends on Facebook. And so for me, my happiest memory is just this sort of like this person who was in my eyes, very Jimmy Stewart-esque, very like, very straight-laced, very good, like, kind of by the book. It's not like he was a fun teacher or anything, you know?
Right, right.
But he was so into instilling values and what it is, it was a history class, what it is to be an American and all this stuff, that this is like an extension of that, you know? And cool. In a year when we all kind of need a little reminder of like, let's be good to each other and like love thy neighbor and, you know, all of that,
for real.
All of that stuff that sometimes we're like, oh, that's BS. It doesn't add up. And then a pandemic happens and we're like, oh, this is literally the only thing that actually matters.
That's true. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that's my half happiest. It's just where I was, who inspired me to watch this film originally as an extension of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
See, that's awesome. For me, it's nothing is as amazing as that. It's mostly just this is my mom's favorite Christmas movie.
Oh.
And so it's one that she has to watch every year. And same thing, my youngest brother also decided to take up that, you know, it kind of got him in the same way. And so whenever I think of this movie, I always think of them. And I remember one time after a particularly rough year, I remember going back home to visit for Christmas and they wanted to put it on. And I just remember us all sitting around the couches, just all just watching It's a Wonderful Life, you know, eating. Yeah. I think they even had M&M cookies in. So we were just eating M&M cookies, watching It's a Wonderful Life, you know, and it's just one of those that I associate it now with my mom and my family. So.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't get better than that. And you're going to have to tell me that M&M cookie recipe because we're going to...
Nice, yeah, for sure.
I'm all for about recreating other people's traditions. So
there you go, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'll definitely... But in fact, I believe... Let's see, this is... Yeah, so this week, well, the M&M episode also drops.
Oh, good.
So it's going to be posted online as well. So.
Awesome.
That was always part of our Christmases, the M&M cookies and the hot chocolate, the, you know, Mexican hot chocolate. So.
Oh, amazing. I can't wait. I bet it's going to be delicious.
I hope so. I think so. But anyway. But now we come to my favorite part of the show, which is a little bit I like to call gag me with the spoon. So this is where we do our best impression of our least favorite part of the movie. Not necessarily something we hate, just something that we didn't like maybe as much as everything else. And so as a guest, or, you know, I'll put it up to the listeners and they'll vote. Winner gets a totally rad Christmas sticker, unless I win, in which I get nothing. But I think you're safe. I don't think I've won yet. So, but yeah, as a guest, I'll let you go first. Just kind of set up the scene for us and then we'll go.
Yeah. So both of my gag me with the spoons, one I won't do, one I will do, but I need to just illustrate this point that at one point when we flash back and we realize that Georgia doesn't exist and Donna Reed never got married, she comes out of this library, right? And we're supposed to believe that she is like mousy or unattractive, and she has never looked better. She invented hot librarian.
Yes,
like
she did.
Donna Reed is the original. Like, she comes out with the glasses and the thing, and I'm like, on what planet is this woman unattractive? My other scene that I will do, God, I cannot do a Jimmy Stewart Mid-Atlantic. I'm terrible at impressions, so warning very much ahead. But basically, at one scene, George Bailey, I don't fully understand why he has this kind of breakdown, but he like goes up to her and he like is shaking her. And I pulled up the script. So here we go. Okay. He goes, now you listen to me. I don't want any plastics and I don't want any ground floors and I don't want to get married ever to anyone. You understand? I want to do what I want to do. And then they make out.
That's the idea. Yeah.
That's my very bad Jimmy Stewart.
No, I liked it. That was good. I dug it. It's going to be better than mine. I'm also doing a Jimmy Stewart. This is when he's confronting Bert. I think Bert is a police officer and Ernie was a cab driver. Yeah. And, you know, he gets punched in the face and, you know, his lip kind of after his, I guess, wish, you know, he's not bleeding anymore. And so then when his wish is granted again, that he lives, it is. And so he sees Bert and he says, excuse me here, but my mouth's bleeding, Bert. My mouth's bleeding. I can't do
this. You sound like Bert from Bert and Ernie. Or you sound terrible. Like Ernie.
Hey, Bert.
Hey, Bert. Are you doing Muppets Christmas? Did you do Muppets Christmas already?
Yes, in fact, it was being recorded tomorrow night.
Oh,
yes,
yeah. Perfect. I can't then wait. You're all yeah. set.
And so I will leave it to you listeners to vote. Apparently, my Jimmy Stewart is so bad, I sound like Ernie. So I don't expect to win, but I'll put it up anyway, and you guys can vote.
Honestly, it's slim pickings this time, team. Sorry about that.
Yeah, our bad. We tried.
We tried.
Oh, man. It does make me wonder, because G.I. Joe, they taught us that knowing is half the battle. Right. What would you say is the other half?
I gotta be honest. I think this is the 90s kid in me. I don't fully get this prompt. Is it just an answer to that question yeah. largely?
Yeah, whatever you want. You can focus it on this particular movie, or you can focus it on anything. I've had all sorts of answers.
Knowing is half the battle.
The other half the battle is.
How the half of the battle is?
Yeah.
My immediate first thought was Donna Reed.
Hey, I'd take that half of a battle if I was single.
This episode is just me being like, everyone has a crush on Donna Reed. I don't care.
It's true. Yeah. That's good. That's better than mine. So mine is, if knowing is half the battle, the other half is making sure that there are no typos in your copyright renewal paperwork.
Clever. That's very good.
Yeah. Oh, man. Kara, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, this has been great. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. But what do you want to plug?
So I am the lesser half of 12 Days Pod.
No, not
true. We are the equal halves. I have a podcast with my boyfriend, my partner. We alternate the third thing with every episode. We're like my Airbnb co-seeker or whatever. and so we have a podcast as well. It's about the Christmas movies and the Christmas holidays. We started it in mid-October, running through Christmas. We were just a seasonal podcast. And basically we do a 25 to 26 minute, we try to keep it around there, wrap up of your seasonal favorites. And we put it on a scale of how many days of Christmas. And that's kind of our larger bit. We
it's a clever bit, by the way.
Thank you. We talk about trivia. We talk about what we would change. We recently did an episode of The Holiday and we recast it with all actors of color. We gender swap things and like try to imagine what the stories would be that way. And we don't always agree. We have different backgrounds. My boyfriend is a half Japanese, Midwestern, all-American boy. I'm a full Latina immigrant, like where I'm like, I did not grow up believing in Santa Claus, but I'm fully integrated in American culture.
Nice.
So you kind of get this weird perspective from different point of views. And it's very quick, very quippy. And we definitely like dig into the fact that we're a couple a lot. We're like, no, it's quippy. We live together. So we're in love.
Yeah. Yes.
But we disagree a lot. So
it happens, you know? I mean,
and so we found that it's just been so much fun. And among our friends who have been listening, everyone has very strong opinions about Christmas movies, which has been amazing. Because mm-hmm. Again, in a year of strong opinions, I much rather disagree about Christmas movies than anything else.
I completely 100% agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so. For sure, you got to check out their show. It's 12 Days Pod. It's fun. It's funny. And where can they find you?
They can find us on anchor.fm/12dayspod. Basically anywhere on the internet, we are 12dayspod. We are on Instagram. We're on Twitter. And I'm Kara Zelaya. I'm everywhere on the internet as well. CaraZelaya.
Right on. That was very cool. And it was a lot of fun. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Have a Merry Christmas.
Well, you too. And on that note, I'll end it by saying, remember, no man is a failure who has friends. So check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling as good as George after seeing his friends rally to his aid, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to vote. Later, dudes.